probably one of the more popular, oh, I say talks, and the reason why is because every speaker up here has mentioned it in the first panel, including this panel. And the reason I say that, we're seeing some issues now, and I'm going to try to stay with the theme the best I can, but I'm going to tell you, talking about insects from a rotational standpoint, you'll run out of things to talk about real quick. But I am going to stay with the theme as far as alternate host and how these host crops may affect cotton, and that's kind of the direction I'm going to try to go. But most of you in this room have heard about some of the issues that we've had in the Mid-South and even the Southeast as far as with stink bugs, but I'm going to talk a lot about some of the factors that may influence some of these bug populations, and maybe even give some things that we can take away from this to apply next year. All right, this is how I'm going to kind of approach this. I'm going to break it up into three sections: crop rotation, which I'll only spend just a little bit of time on; host abundance, and really what I'm talking about here is how much of a crop will we grow in a given year that is actually a host that may increase the number of certain insects. And this crop interface, I'm going to talk about it a good bit, mainly from the standpoint is this is what growers see, especially in the South, the Mid-South, when we have high plant bug numbers and we see these edge effects next to corn and even other crops. All right, really though, if you boil everything down, what I'm really talking about is the change in landscape. And the change in landscape really does have a big influence on pest populations, which in turn has an influence on cotton. In Mississippi, we went down 46% in our cotton acres this year. We went from 1.23 million to like 666,000 acres. You look at corn, we went from like 330,000 acres up to 980,000 acres. We moved from around 100,000 acres of wheat to about 300, 320,000 acres of wheat. So we saw a huge difference in the landscape this year. And with that come different problems. Now, I will tell you, it's hard, real hard pressed to get a bunch of entomologists to tell you what they think is going to happen next year. And the reason why is because we're usually wrong. These are just a few factors. There are a lot of factors when it comes to trying to predict insect problems, primarily the weather. And we can't predict the weather. But we can make some general assumptions. And these general assumptions may actually even lead to some of the decisions you will make in the given year. One of the things that we see, at least from a rotational standpoint, and this is the only thing I'm going to mention directly from a rotational standpoint, in 2004, you know, we had a lot of slug problems in Mississippi. This was somewhat of a new pest. This is directly related to a rotation, and in fact, a no-till rotation. 100% of our problems with slugs were in corn or grain sorghum rotations in no-till. We had cotton that was replanted due to slugs, and we had replanted cotton that was replanted due to slugs, and we had very little options to control them. 2005, we saw a little bit of the problem. 2006 and 7, we haven't seen the problem since. Generally, it's in a wet, cool year when we see these type problems. In the last 3 years, we have not really had the sort of conditions to facilitate the problems we had like in 2004 and 5. But this can be a problem, and it's something that we know. We got to the point after the problem we had in 2004, we got to the point in 2005 that what we were doing, we were checking these fields actually like in March. We knew they were going to be no-till planted into corn, so we would actually scout the fields trying to do some research. We were working on ways in March to predict the problem we would have in the in the spring, and because one of the only ways we can fix the problem is tillage. We didn't have any luck with any other method, so if we could find the problem early, we could fix it before we planted. All right, this is the big areas right here, I would say. The three big crops that's probably displaced the cotton acres that actually influenced the pest problems somewhat in the cotton acres. This year we're going to see it with soybeans, tremendous host for stink bugs. Wheat last year, one of the predictions we made that was actually right last year is we knew we would have a thrips problem because of all the wheat in Mississippi, and we did have a thrips problem in the Delta area. We had a big thrips problem compared to years past. Wheat's a terrific host for thrips. It's also a terrific host for stink bugs, particularly brown stink bugs during the milk stage, and we don't really treat wheat for stink bugs, so it serves as a refuge, and when it dries down, they can move into your other crops. Corn is a problem for us in several ways. This is another one where we actually made some predictions. We were kind of right and kind of wrong. The one we were kind of right on was plant bugs. We anticipated a big plant bug problem with the increase in corn acres. The one we were wrong about is we anticipated a big worm year because of corn. And I'll talk about that just a little more. Corn is a terrific host. When corn is silking, you usually have no trouble finding lots of eggs in corn, corn earworm eggs in corn. Those, when they go into the ground and pupate, generally when they come out, they infest your cotton. This is a slide I put together a while back, just kind of plotting percent of acres in Mississippi treated for worms and corn acres. They correlate very well. We were wrong about this one this year. The reason we were wrong, when our moth traps really, really peaked, it was before the corn was silking. Right when the corn started silking, our moth traps went down to almost nothing. So the two things didn't correlate. They didn't coincide. So a lot of things, when you're trying to predict insect problems, we were set up and had the potential to have a big worm year because of the corn acres, but everything didn't line up properly. And that's often why you're wrong when you try to predict insect problems. But generally, if you look over time, like you see in this graph here, we know that we can have problems when we have more corn, and other areas did. Crop interface. I want to spend just a little bit of time talking about this one. This is really these border effects that we see from other crops or even non-crop hosts. This was actually cotton next to corn. The corn's obviously been harvested, which would be on your right. This cotton was sprayed 11 times for plant bugs. You can look right next to the corn, still no white. This is something that our growers see, they pick up on. This is actually something we'll be talking about a lot in the coming years as the Mid-South group, and we work in collaborative projects. This is one that we'll be talking about, ways to address this. I had a grower recently tell me he sprayed his borders next to his corn more than he sprayed the rest of his field, which is probably a good practice because the numbers are generally higher there. But when every time he called the airplane, he had 300 acres of borders that he treated. One of the things we're starting to think about, the best we can is minimize some of these edge effects. This is some cotton we had next to corn. This was sprayed 11 times. We give up on this cotton. It's about 8 foot tall, really no fruit on it. We just lost control right next to corn. We never could keep them out. So we kind of give up on that one. They see the same thing in the southeast with the peanut cotton interface. Different pests, stink bugs. Stink bugs tend to do very well in peanuts, move into your cotton. See the same thing, but these interfaces are things that can cause you some trouble, and they're very, very obvious from the turn row, so the farmers tend to see it. So it hadn't been long ago, we would have never even really been talking about these BMPs. You're hearing a lot about BMPs. If you were in the bug symposium, you heard a lot about this yesterday. But because we're at the point now, at least with tarnished plant bug control, we're at the point now, we don't have a lot of chemical options. We're starting to look back at everything we can do, non-chemical and other, to help these farmers reduce some of these sprays. We averaged 7.5 sprays for tarnished plant bugs in the Mississippi Delta last year. The record before that was 5.2, and that was in 2004. From some survey work that I conducted this year, we treated at least 25,000 acres in the Central Delta between 14 and 16 times for plant bugs alone. We won't be able to sustain that. And with the absence of good chemistry, new chemistry coming out, we don't have a lot of chemistry for plant bugs. But in the absence of that, we're going to have to start to look at other things. These are some of the ones right here, and I'm going to quickly go through some of them, some of the ideas and some of the things we're coming up with in the Mid-South to address some of these problems. Host plant manipulation, this is a big one. If you were in the symposium yesterday, you heard about it. USDA has been working on these 9 square mile areas where they're spraying the ditch banks, killing the broadleaf weeds out that are host to plant bugs. By some of what they've done in 1999, 2000, and 01, basically they've reduced their plant bug sprays in the treated zones by about one. None of these are alone silver bullets, but when you start combining all of these BMPs, all of these management practices that we can do, we really think that we're set in the absence of new chemistry to help producers save money. This is a big one right here. We moved to late season varieties. Nothing wrong with that. That's great. They fit some areas very, very well. But when we get into plant bug situations like we were in the Mid-South, just by manipulating your variety alone, and this is the two extremes, 444 versus 555, we can save sometimes 2 sprays by going with the early variety. It's something we may have to look at in the future. Nectarless, this is beginning to gain steam again. You're hearing a lot more about this these days. Nectarless varieties, there's at least several companies working on them. You know, if I had 2 varieties and I was in the Mid-South in a plant bug situation with all things equal, essentially they were the same variety, I would choose a nectarless variety every time. The reason why, there's reams of data that we could possibly save a spray. Now, again, by itself, it's not a silver bullet, but there's a lot of data that actually shows that nectarless varieties, we can possibly reduce a spray from plant bugs. So it's something we're looking into. Nozzle selections. This seems like a simple thing, but it's probably one of the most abused things you can see when you go on any farm. You can usually look under the shed in the tractor, and you'll find people using the wrong nozzles, a lot of times different nozzles. This is some tests we conducted in 2006. You can influence, this is the same chemistry sprayed at the same rate, but just by manipulating the nozzles, really moving droplet size, can have a big impact on tarnished plant bugs and other pests that's been shown with. All right, rotating chemistry. We talk a lot about rotating chemistry. Really, though, at least in the Mid-South and from a plant bug situation, we're almost out of chemistry. And our growers do a very good job of rotating chemistry. We really just don't have enough options. But you can see here that dotted line is a threshold. And what you're looking at is a three-spray scenario or a three-reek scenario. We have acephate, untreated acephate. And that's the red bar. Went over back above the threshold. Just using acephate, 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 we hit the threshold. Barely hit it, but we hit it, the green bar. But just by working centric in that middle, in the rotation, we were able to keep that population below threshold and save a spray. All right. Take me just a second to set this slide up, but I think this is probably one of the most important. These spray intervals, shortened spray intervals during high pressure, high insect pressure situations. And I'm particularly talking about plant bugs. We know time and time again, we've always recommended just two shots for plant bugs, usually 5 to 7 days apart. It is critical when we get into situations like we were in the Mid-South this year that we shorten the spray intervals. I know a lot of consultants that the farmer actually told them, 7 to 10 days is as tight as I can go. But we have research actually showing, we've seen this anecdotally for a number of years, we have research showing that if we start waiting 6-7 days, control falls off dramatically. So basically what you're looking here on the right, going out 4 and 5 days behind an application, we were getting 100% control on application number two. But when we went out to 6 and 7 days, control dropped off to 70 and 20. So when we get in these high pressure situations, we're going to have to reduce our spray intervals and keep chemistry rotated and use the full rates when possible. Finally, I'm just going to mention sample the crop. This is obvious to most cotton growers, but we got to sample the crop. That's the first stage. We don't need to be checking it from the truck. We don't need to be making automatic applications. We need to sample the crop, and when we got bugs, we need to treat them accordingly. But it's probably the most important thing we can do is sample and sample timely. And finally, I'm just going to end, knowledge is key. I mean, we talked about a lot of things here today, but if you kind of know some of the things that you may can anticipate by alternate crops, if you know your corn acres are going up, 300%, you can probably anticipate certain things such as plant bugs or stink bugs and the such. So knowledge is key, and I'd just like to end there and pass it on to you, Steve.